All right, back on the Young Turks, Chris Duran writes in, I thought the GOP hated executive orders. Didn't they whine when Obama made them? Oh, I forgot, Obama has a D next to his name. I mean, the way they turn around on a dime is amazing. Mm-hmm. You know why? Because they have no conscience. They're like, executive orders are unconstitutional and dictatorial. Executive orders are awesome and mean that you're accomplishing a lot and delivering on your campaign promises. What? I didn't say it the day before. No, yes, you fucking did. I saw it. I have it on tape. Okay.
Yep.
Michael Ritchie, he says about the guys getting let off, but promising to, you know, or being admonished to vote for Trump. Not a bad deal. Trump won't be up for re-election, so sign me up. I hope you're right, Michael. All right, we've got a lot more news for you guys. Casper.
All right. Roy Price is now the former CEO of Amazon Studios following accusations that he sexually harassed a producer for one of the series on Amazon. Issa Hackett spoke to The Hollywood Reporter recently and told them about her experience getting sexually harassed by Roy Price. And immediately after the accusations and immediately after the report came out, Amazon Studios suspended Roy Price and he has since resigned from the position. Now, just to give you a refresher, Hackett told The Hollywood Reporter last week that in 2015, Price allegedly propositioned her in a cab on the way to an Amazon party, but she told him she has a wife and children. He allegedly told her, "You will love my dick," he said, according to Hackett, who relayed her account to multiple individuals in the hours after the alleged episode. Two people corroborated that account to The Hollywood Reporter. Hackett says Price did not relent in the cab. And once they arrived at the Amazon party, so he continued harassing her. As she talked with other executives, she says that Price stepped close to her ear and loudly said, "Anal sex." So he has resigned, he has stepped down. I haven't seen a statement from him, I haven't seen any admission from him, but nonetheless, the fact that he's no longer working there is a victory for not only Hackett, who is producing the series Man in the High Castle, but also for other women who would have to deal with him as the head of Amazon Studios.
I mean, to say that it's poor judgment at least is understating it. She says, "No thank you, I have a wife." He goes, "You'll love my dick." Probably not. Probably not. Okay, now this was unsolicited and it is clear sexual harassment. You hold a position of power over her. You could green light future projects or not. She told you she's not interested. You're still pursuing it and in a kind of a gross way, to say the least. And she's told you she's got a wife. She's like, "Oh, good point. On the other hand, anal sex." Okay. I mean, if you weren't worried, you weren't worried about the sexual harassment. One, you should be. Two, I don't even want to get into whether he was drunk or not. It doesn't matter. It's not an excuse. Mm-hmm. Really, really poor judgment.
It was poor judgment on his part, of course. But you know, Hackett went and complained about this to Amazon and let them know what happened. So she did report it immediately. And what I found interesting was, you know, she didn't hear anything from anyone, you know, following her report. However, he was still employed. She just didn't see him around as much. She didn't have to work with him as closely as before. Amazon didn't suspend him until The Hollywood Reporter reported on this. So they were aware of these allegations well before The Hollywood Reporter reported on it. So look, I'm saying this because it's important to keep in mind that these types of things oftentimes do get reported to higher ups. They do get reported to human resources. And it seems like it either gets brushed under the rug or there might be a small Band-Aid placed over a gushing wound. And in this case, it seemed like they just put a Band-Aid over it until Hackett went public with what happened and people started criticizing Amazon for it.
Doesn't make a difference if there's a spotlight on something.
Of course.
Of course. And so that's why this movement is so important, because if you put a bigger spotlight on it, it's going to make men who are predisposed to doing this a little bit more reluctant, and some small percentage of women as well. I knew someone who had actually worked here once. She told a story on air before about how she was sexually assaulted by a female executive. And so it's just it's mainly a position of power. Yes, a hugely percentage of men do it, but either way, we got to put a spotlight on it so people realize that they can't get away with it anymore.
More and more women are sharing their stories of sexual assault or sexual harassment, and a lot of those individuals include public figures, people in the entertainment industry, and now we're also hearing from Olympians. So Olympic gymnast Michaela Maroney shared her story of being sexually assaulted by an Olympic doctor. And this doctor is actually currently in prison. Actually, he's in jail awaiting trial on child pornography charges. But Dr. Larry Nassar, who is currently awaiting sentencing after pleading guilty to federal child pornography charges, is the person that Maroney is accusing of assaulting her for years, since she was 13 years old. Now, she used the Me Too hashtag to share her story on Twitter, and here is a portion of her statement. She said, "It started when I was 13 years old, and it didn't end until I left the sport. I had a dream to go to the Olympics, and the things that I had to endure to get there were unnecessary and disgusting." So again, it started when she was 13 years old. She said, "I had flown all day," recounting one of the instances, "with the team to get to Tokyo. Nassar had given me a sleeping pill for the flight, and the next thing I know, I was all alone with him in his hotel room getting treatment. I thought I was going to die that night." Now, to give you further context, there have been a number of women who have come forward accusing him of sexual assault. They would say that during these physical exams, he would place his fingers inside them and fondle them in ways that were obviously inappropriate. And so he is pleading not guilty to those charges, but when it comes to child pornography, he has agreed to plead guilty.
So one of the interesting things about the story is that he's got hundreds of lawsuits against him. So this guy was a serial abuser, and like Anna said, he's already pled guilty at least to the child pornography charges. So we kind of see where this is going, and I don't think hundreds of people are making it up. And many of Maroney's teammates had already accused Nassar of abuse while they were minors. But even so, it took all the other women coming forward before Maroney thought, you know what, there's no reason to hide it. There's no reason to feel bad about it. No, he should feel bad about it. And now she's finally coming forward too. And she's a gold medal winner, and so it's a little bit bigger spotlight. But just to see this happening in real time, as women are growing bolder and getting encouraged by each other to step out and fight back, I don't want you to underestimate what an amazing time this is. It's happening right in front of our eyes as the culture is shifting. Because it's apparently, and as we see one story after another, amazing what men used to get away with, and we never talked about Ailes, Cosby, Weinstein, Trump, and the list goes on and on, Nassar, and it was all buried. You get pop little stories here and there, but we had no idea how endemic it was, and maybe women knew it a hell of a lot better than men did, but to see it unfolding in real time as women kind of stand up together collectively and go no more, it's wonderful to see.
It is. And what's also incredible and depressing at the same time is because of this Me Too campaign, there have been so many women that I know personally speaking up and sharing stories that I didn't previously know about. And it's just heartbreaking to know, the number of women that we all know that have gone through this. And I've been thinking about the Me Too campaign a lot because, there are women who share some of the most heinous stories, like what Maroney is talking about, being fondled, being sexually assaulted like that. And so when I think about, things that I've gone through, I feel like it's not appropriate for me to share the stories that I've experienced, right? So I have shared the story of the guy who was riding his bike and he went around, he slapped my butt. And then rode away laughing. And then he came around again to do it again. And then that was when I defended myself and I kicked him off the bike. And so that was the only, I thought that was the only time that I had ever experienced anything like that. And then I remembered something else that I've never talked about. And I never felt shame because it happened. You hear women talk about, oh, I felt shame when it happened. But I actually feel shame now because when it happened, I just thought of it as, well, that's just the way things go and I have to accept it. And I feel embarrassed by that. So I'm not naming any names, but I remember talking to you about it, so you will remember it. You and I went to a party for a pretty big YouTuber.
Oh, I remember now, yes.
And there were a number of big YouTubers there, one of which I was a fan of. And we took a picture together. And as we were taking that picture, he thought that it was, by the way, my boyfriend at the time was taking the photo of us. He thought it was completely appropriate to grab my ass as that picture was being taken. And so it's weird because I at the time, yeah, I didn't like it. But I just kind of like put it in the back of my head as, this is just the way things go. This is how people treat you sometimes. There's nothing I can do about it. And that kind of stuff happens all the time. And I actually find myself lucky that I haven't had to go through some of the extreme situations that other women have had to go through. But every woman has gone through something like that, you know?
Yeah, and maybe with this movement, it's gonna get a lot harder. Because you know, if you're a guy and you're thinking about sexually harassing a woman or assaulting them, yeah, you sure it's not going to get put on social media immediately? Mm-hmm. So you better think twice. And if you think that that's a bad thing, well, I got news for you. You might be the bad guy. So I think it's a great thing that women are fighting back.
I agree. Let's take one more break. When we come back, a GOP lawmaker wants to turn you away if you go to the emergency room. I'll tell you which lawmaker it is.
Back on the Young Turks, I want to remind you guys of a couple of things. One, we got a double stream going on here.
What does that even mean?
So right now on youtube.com/theyoungturks, they could be watching us. So in fact, the only way they would know that we have a double stream is if they're watching right now, and I just told you. And at the same time, there's a stream going on of the DNC Unity Reform Commission in Vegas that John Iderola and Emma Bigland are covering. Mm-hmm. And so when our show is over, make sure you keep watching that stream. Mm-hmm. And I think afterwards they might do some interviews as well with some of the commissioners, because they're deciding important things like superdelegates, primaries or caucuses. Can anyone outside of Tom Perez see the DNC budget? Which is so weird that no other human is allowed to see it other than him and the treasurer, I think. Even the executive committee can't see it. No, like, nope.
Can't see it.
It's crazy. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and then TYT Investigates is doing a series on how the tax cuts are not leading to jobs. And I want you to make sure that you check that out as well. TYTnetwork.com/investigates for all those stories. All right, a couple of tweets for you. Michael Ritchie says, glad that Price resigned. I wouldn't want him to mar my enjoyment of the man in the high castle. The liberal Hoosier says, can we get a JR special mix up of congressman dissing then praising executive orders? That seems like it'd be fun to share. Mm-hmm. I hear you. We'll talk to JR about that. And then Lucy Furr says, fucking A right. We're in the middle of an evolution. Right now, enjoy it. We were born at the right time. I like it. I like the passion behind that, Lucy. It's wonderful. Yes.
But then there's a volcano that might kill all of us any minute now. So just keep that in mind. Okay. I'm sorry, Lucy.
I love you, Lucy. All right, we'll talk about that in the post.
Yeah.
All right, what's next?
All right. A GOP lawmaker thinks it's a bad idea that people have to get treated if they go to the emergency room. In fact, she thinks that we could save doctors and this whole healthcare system a lot of money if we didn't have to treat everyone that showed up to the emergency room. Now, this is Representative Diane Black. She is from Tennessee, and she was speaking to Chuck Todd about this issue. And I want you to hear from her and what she has to say. Take a look.
you're being forced into figuring out how to subsidize that free health care that nobody pays for in the emergency room.
So let me tell you, Chuck, I'm an emergency room nurse. There are people that came into my emergency room that I, the nurse, was the first one to see them,
right,
that I could have sent them to a walk-in clinic or their doctor the next day, but because of a law that Congress put into place to say, no, I have to treat everybody that walks in that emergency room, you took away our ability to be able to say, no, an emergency room is not the proper place. And then you put a burden on top of that to say, you must do that.
So you would get rid of the law that mandates emergency rooms to see every patient that shows up?
I would get rid of a law that says that you are not allowed as a healthcare professional to make that decision about whether someone can be appropriately treated the next day or at a walk-in clinic or at their doctor.
So I actually think that if you all you heard was that, you might walk away thinking, well, that seems reasonable. I mean, that's a person who practiced this as a nurse and knows what it is, and she should be able to use her judgment. And if somebody came in with a flu, you could say, hey, you know what, come to the clinic tomorrow instead of taking up space in the emergency room. Okay, but that's if you don't know the history of it. And as a congresswoman now running for governor, she should know it a little bit better and the consequences that could flow from it. The person who actually signed the law into effect was a well-known liberal named Ronald Reagan. Okay, it was the Emergency Medical Treatment and Active Labor Act. Now, I'm going to talk about active labor in a second. But the reason they did it is because back in the day, hospitals would do what they called patient dumping. So somebody would walk into the hospital, they're like, oh, he doesn't have insurance and it's going to cost a lot. And they would just refuse to treat him. And they would either just drive him out to the street and say goodbye and good luck, or they'd make a different hospital take him. And they kept doing this patient dumping to the point that Congress had to pass the law and Reagan signed it into effect. So before you go running around talking about like, they took my freedom away to deny you healthcare, look into it a little bit and find out. Like, that's normally, I think, if a law is outrageous, there must have been a good reason for it. Maybe at some point, let me find out why. And she didn't, of course, do that. And the active labor part is because women would come in pregnant in the middle of labor, and hospitals would dump them anyway if they didn't have insurance. And so that's why even the pro-life movement was like, that's a fetus, that's the one thing we care about. Okay, and you're sending them away in the middle of labor, and that could cause tremendous problems. So that's why they passed the law in the first place. That's why that law is absolutely necessary.
You are giving her the benefit of the doubt in saying that maybe she doesn't know the history of why this law was enacted in the first place. But I think everyone, especially someone who's a current lawmaker, knows that emergency rooms end up serving as a last resort for the poor who haven't been able to provide or to pay for health insurance, who haven't had access to health insurance. And so their health conditions get so bad that they end up in emergency rooms, right? And they should be seen by doctors if they show up to the emergency room. And look, maybe I'm too real and maybe I see the dark side of humanity a little too much. But I don't want anyone to be the arbiter of whether or not someone deserves care at that moment, right? So she brings up someone who has a sore throat for a week or someone who might have the flu, but I'm not buying for a second that those are the only individuals that would be turned away. We all know that more people would be turned away for more serious conditions. And sometimes you go into the emergency room not knowing what's wrong with you, and maybe the symptoms don't seem that serious to the person that you're describing it to, but it might end up being something incredibly serious. What if you just got hit in the head and you're worried that you're gonna suffer a concussion? Like, these are things that you should be treated for. And so when you know the history and when you know, you know, the demographic that typically ends up in the emergency room, you understand why that law was enacted in the first place. But by the way, another thing I wanted to state is that if you're a hospital that's not receiving any Medicare funds, you can turn people away. It's just that if you're receiving government money, taxpayer money, Medicare funds, you can't do it. You can't turn people away. So if you're genuinely against this type of law and you don't want to have to abide by it, then stop receiving Medicare money. And then you can go ahead and patient dump as much as you want.
So here in LA, in our healthcare plan, we have something called urgent care as opposed to the emergency room. It's for lighter stuff that happens to you. And I love it because everybody, of course, knows the lines in the emergency rooms, and it's a real hassle. We know that that's a real issue. So urgent care has come up now, and that's much, much better in this system. So we're not saying that the lines in the emergency room are not an issue. But remember, it's not like the treatment requires you to take 7 hours with the person. If they just have a sore throat and they sat through whatever they had to sit through and they got to you, you say, okay, now here's Advil for your throat and we're done with it. Mm-hmm. It's not like you're mandated to do anything else. In fact, it would probably take you almost the same amount of time to dismiss them. Because how do you know if they have a sore throat or they don't? Which leads to a story of mine, which is pretty tragic. A really good friend of mine, his father, this was in Turkey. Now it doesn't apply to our laws, but it gives you a sense of what can go wrong in a hospital. His father was involved in an accident, and the doctors looked at him and thought he was fine. It turns out they were negligent. He wasn't. He had internal bleeding, and he died. So that's why when you go to the emergency room, yes, someone should take a couple of minutes out to make sure you're okay and not dump you on the streets and go, I'm using my good judgment to make sure I don't treat you. That's not the kind of country we should be.
All right, moving on. Donald Trump loves to talk about fake news. Anytime anyone in the media writes something that appears to be critical, Trump just brushes it off as false reporting and fake. However, it turns out that him repeatedly saying that is kind of working. And some Americans do believe that the media is fabricating stories about Trump and his administration. So Politico and Morning Consult did a poll on this, and here's what they found. If you look at all voters, and you take a representative sample and look at all voters, it turns out that 46% of voters say yes, the media is making up stories about Trump. 37% say no, and 17% are undecided.
Look, this is really important. They're not saying that the media is biased and slanting the stories or giving their opinion on the stories. They're saying that the news media is fabricating the stories. Fabricating, just making it up out of whole cloth. So in fact, Donald Trump did have a record-breaking size at his inauguration, but the news media got together and decided to fabricate that the crowds were not that big, and they fabricated the pictures. I mean, I'm just giving you one example.
Are we fabricating his tweets too? Are we fabricating things that he says on television himself? I mean, anyway, okay. It's just absurd, because even if we did absolutely no reporting whatsoever, he says things himself. He tweets, he can't stop himself from tweeting. He attacks people, he gets involved in these ridiculous like non-issues and these fights. Anyway, all right, let's focus on Republicans, Democrats, independents, yada, yada. What do they think? Like when you divvy it up, when you divvy up the voters and look at their ideological background, what do they think in regard to news coverage on Trump? When it comes to Republicans, of course, the vast majority think that the media is fabricating stories about them. 76% of Republican voters say yes, there are fabrications in the media on Trump. 11% say no.
Okay, so let's pause there for a second. Now you're going to say, okay, yeah, of course Republicans believe that more. But no, let's pause to note that 3/4 of Republicans in this country have lost their minds. So if you say the corporate media is biased, I'm going to agree with you guys. I'm not trying to defend their bias. And you know, I've said this a million times. I think they have an establishment bias. The status quo is great. They work for a multi-billion dollar corporation. But I also have worked there. I know a lot of those folks. I know how the system works. They don't just sit in a room and go, what can we make up about anyone? Whether it's Donald Trump or Bernie Sanders, who I really like. No, they're slanted. They think Bernie Sanders shouldn't be president. They will take something he said and twist his words a little bit, right? So I understand that. I feel your pain if you think they're biased, whether we're on the same side or not. But they don't go in a room and go, let's just make up a story about Bernie Sanders out of whole cloth. Let's just imagine it. And you know, don't worry, our editors won't fire us for fabricating a story. They don't do it about Trump. And 3/4 of Republicans in this country believe something that isn't remotely true. We've lost them. We've lost them. They don't live in this reality. They live in an alternate reality.
So the numbers are different when it comes to Democrats. Only 20% of Democrats believe that the media is fabricating stories about Trump and the administration. 65% say no.
Sorry, real quick, pause there too. 20% of Democrats think the media is inventing stories, fabricating stories about Trump. Oh my God, the media has lost all credibility.
No, it's about to get a lot worse. And also, it's something that I think everyone, regardless of your ideology, should be concerned about, because this is, you know, this is like the roadmap to a tyrannical government. And the reason why I say that is because the media is so important in holding elected officials accountable, whether they're on the right or the left, it doesn't matter. Journalism is important, right? And if you have an American electorate that is distrustful of the media and doesn't see the value of journalism, you are essentially paving the way for someone like Trump to do some pretty terrible things. So very quickly, when it comes to independents, 44% believe the media is making up stories about Trump, 31% say no.
We've lost independents.
Yeah.
Independents are actually now real. Before they were just, you know, they were to some degree Republican leaning for a long time. Independents are now true independents, and they do decide elections. I've seen that happen right in front of my eyes over the course of the last decade or so. And partly because people are no longer attached to party labels like they were in earlier times. And if you've lost independents, that's really bad news. And for the majority of independents, or at least the plurality of independents, to say yes, the news media is liars who just make up stories about Trump, oh, that's really bad news. And we didn't invent that.
So just to give you more bad news, and what I would argue is the scariest part about all of this. There are Americans who believe that the government, Trump specifically, should have the ability to take licenses away from news organizations. Now, if you could recall, recently Trump criticized NBC News and said that NBC News should have its license revoked. And apparently there are Americans who think that the president should have the power to do that. Let's go to graphic 18. Now, it's a small portion of the country overall, but it still concerns me. 28% think the government should have the power to revoke broadcast licenses of major news organizations that it says are fabricating news stories about a president or the administration, while 51% think the government should not be able to do that. Another 21% are undecided. Okay. So here are specific numbers that are tied to parties. More than two-thirds of Democrats, 68%, think the federal government should not have the power to revoke broadcast licenses of those organizations. Only 68%. Like, what's going on? There are Democrats that think that it's okay for the government to revoke licenses from news organizations that it doesn't like. You're gonna allow them to be the arbiter of what is and is not fabricated news and have the power to revoke their licenses? What is wrong with you? That is fucking insane. That is so incredibly devastating. Like, Democrats? Okay, well, we've completely lost it. So let's go on to Republicans. 46% of Republicans think the government should have the power, and a third of GOP voters who don't think so. So a third of GOP voters say no, shouldn't have the power to do that. But 46% of Republicans believe, yeah, definitely, the government should have the power to revoke licenses from news organizations that it doesn't like.
Okay, so if you're in that camp who believes that, you're un-American. You are. It's one of the most central parts of our government. The First Amendment guarantees the freedom of the press. If you don't agree, first of all, if you don't think that we should apply the First Amendment, I assume that you will immediately agree that we also should not apply the Second Amendment. Oh wait, you like to pick and choose among amendments? I thought you were constitutionalists, right wingers. No, you don't love the Constitution, you don't love this country, you don't love our system.
You guys are throwing feces at one another over Ben Shapiro giving a speech at Berkeley, right? Because oh my God, this is a violation of our constitutional amendments if they don't allow him to speak. Which by the way, again, for the billionth time, I agree with that. He should be allowed to speak, Ann Coulter should be allowed to speak. Whatever deplorable individual you want on that campus should be allowed to speak. But at the same time, you're gonna turn around and say that the government should be able to revoke licenses for media organizations that it doesn't like?
So,
wow.
So that's deeply disturbing for what Americans think, how Donald Trump has driven that narrative, and unfortunately it's worked. He recently did a tweet. I mean, you know, he said fake news a million times. And he accused CNN and all the rest of being, quote, fiction writers. He just tweeted that the other day. But there is one other factor here, and one other party that's responsible, and that is the mainstream media. And so now, there are a lot of things that I disagree with the mainstream media on. You know, I've done stories about 1,000 Morning Joe mistakes, and the way that they frame it, they're preposterous. They talk about what the American people think, and they don't back it up with polling. I did one on Chuck Todd, etc. Do I think that NBC's license should be taken away? Are you insane? No, I also can speak, and I could show you their clip, and then I could show you our clip, that I could show you data to prove us right. That is called more speech. And by the way, you're allowed to do the same exact thing. You're allowed to do it on YouTube, Facebook, anywhere you like, and you could even make stuff up, and you often do on the right wing, over and over and over again. And then turn around and go, can you believe people are making stuff up? Okay, are you kidding me? Look at the right wing blogs. Half of it on that, half of the stuff on there is made up. And we're not talking about ending their freedom of speech, even though they consistently actually lie.
By the way, you know that journalists can get sued at any time for defamation. Like, we have laws that prevent people from flat out lying about people, whether it's an elected official or a private citizen. If you are found guilty of defamation laws, you're gonna face some serious consequences for that. No one is allowed to just fabricate stories about anyone. Okay, there are already laws preventing that from happening. Do journalists sometimes get facts wrong? Absolutely, they're humans, and should they get criticized for that? Yes. But to say that they're making up stories about the president is absolutely ludicrous. And quite honestly, it makes me feel like we're just wasting our time, right? Like, what are we doing? We're wasting our time. They don't want to believe it because it goes against what they already believe, their preconceived notions.
No, we have to win the independence. And that is why I'm so mad at the establishment media, because they refuse to acknowledge their bias and thereby hurt the rest of the media, because they keep saying, oh, we're neutral, we're objective, we have no bias at all. And for some of them, that's absolutely true. And a lot of the print guys are terrific, Reuters, McClatchy, The Guardian, The Intercept, I can go on and on and on, right? But for cable news guys and for a lot of the broadcast news guys, they favor the status quo. They do, but they don't recognize it. They think that everything is wonderful, we shouldn't have too much change. Everyone on the left is a radical, everyone on the right is a radical, and they say it and they pound that message home all the day. Now, I don't care in that I'm not going to shut them down for it. I disagree with them. That's okay. But when they say that they have a monopoly on the truth, and the truth is that the status quo is great, what the rest of the country hears is, screw you, you're not on my side. And when I say that to the establishment media, they get really angry. But knuckleheads, unlike these guys, we're not trying to tear you down. We're trying to make it better so that people actually trust you again. But if you keep telling everybody that anyone who wants change is a radical, and people like Hillary Clinton and by the way, Mike Pence and establishment Republicans and establishment Democrats are awesome and they're honorable gentlemen, and that we should go back to the middle and keep doing what their donors say. When you do ridiculous things like pretend that money in politics doesn't matter. No, these are honorable gentlemen having a debate in Congress. They're not having a debate. They took a check and then they did what their donors told them to do. When you pretend things like that, you lose all credibility. And what you're doing, unfortunately, is helping the other side attack the core principles of America and helping them destroy the freedom of the press. You're not helping, you're hurting. We're trying to fix it, but I don't know that we're ever gonna get through to the establishment press or to the right wing, or now even some Democrats who think, no, they just get in a room, have like fantasy time, make up random stories and then print them or put them on TV.
Man, this is incredibly embarrassing and depressing.
And by the way, and no matter what you guys are saying, and honestly what we're saying, Trump is at 44%. Now, for most presidents, that's a really bad number. But for him, he's climbing. He was in the mid-30s. He's going up to 44%. Man, they are just, folks in America are not listening to the media. The media has been overwhelmingly negative to Trump. And people are going, I don't care, I like him anyway.
All right, well, enjoy what he's about to do to your life. And what he's been doing to your life, to be quite honest. Enjoy it.
Yeah.
Have fun.
Unfortunately, we'll be proven right again about Trump. But it won't be pretty in the meanwhile. All right, we got to go, guys. We will see you in the postgame. Bye-bye.